With over 50 years of experience with religious and nonprofit organizations, Thomas Alexander Insurance and Associates understands that your congregation is different from a traditional business. We're here to fulfill your needs, coming to you while creating a personal plan for your budget and size. From your local community to around the globe, we are advocates for you. Thomas Alexander Insurance and Associates, your partner in service.
Welcome to the Church Safety and Security Broadcast with the Church Safety Guys. Brought to you by TwoWayRadioCenter.com, a Motorola value-added reseller. The Church Safety Guys is a nonprofit organization dedicated to equipping the vigilant, those men and women who stand watch, keeping our houses of worship and places of faith safe. We believe church safety and security must be a ministry first, and have engaged servant leaders who continually strive for excellence and teams of motivated volunteers that are always training. Join us for the next hour as the Church Safety Guys unpack safety, security, leadership, and ministry operations with your hosts, Dr. James McGarvey and Mike Scully. This broadcast is also available on YouTube, your favorite podcast platforms, ChurchSafetyGuys.com, and on the original Church Security app. Download it today. Feel free to like, subscribe, and share with your ministry.
Well, hello, welcome to the Church Safety and Security Broadcast with the Church Safety Guys. I am James, and once again, joined by my co-host, Mike.
How you doing, sir?
I am doing well at the moment. Busy, good. Busy week, busy weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been crazy. VBS, other sorts of my daughter's dance recitals, and like, in other words, plural. Like there were three of them on a single weekend. And so we just survived all of that. So catching our breath.
You know, I guess I was fortunate. I'm trying to think. I don't think any of my daughters ever did dance. I had one that did soccer for a season, and I helped coach. I was one of the assistant coaches while she played soccer.
Yep.
And, I had a blast. I'm not sure. I think she was probably, I don't know, 7 or 8 at the time. I think she enjoyed it too, but that was kind of our bout with sports and
yep.
extracurricular activities. It kind of jumped to being involved with mostly church activities for sake of time and sanity.
It makes sense. So. I mean, mine are still young, so I'm still dealing with kind of the initial juggle, because I only have 2 of 3 with very big activities, although my littlest just started dance too. So it's pretty crazy. I'd say it's mostly...
She's got some moves too. I've seen those.
It's mostly on the wife, because she's doing the professional Uber driver of our kids, essentially, back and forth to all their activities. But we're blessed.
For sure. Well, if you just joined us, or maybe you've never joined us, maybe this is the first time, welcome. We certainly have different resources for your ministry at churchsafetyguys.com, our website, and you're welcome to reach out to us if we can help you or your ministry through our website. And then we also have the Church Security app that is free to download, thanks to our different sponsors and partners, and we certainly couldn't do what we do without them. So,
right.
I love to shout out for 2wayradiocenter.com specifically. Billy does a fantastic job encouraging and supporting our ministry here, and they do a fantastic job with churches helping with communication needs and different things like that. So,
and that's why we have him named as one of our CSG trusted partners. That's something, if you haven't seen it on our website, we have specifically gone out of our way to label certain entities as highly trusted by us. We've gone through and scrutinized kind of their approach, their ethics, their character, most importantly, because at the end of the day, it's not what the shingle says. It's not our the type of business they are. It's really what's their character. And we really believe that not only do they have a good product, but Billy's a great guy, and he's done a lot to help support this broadcast, get this out on the air so people like y'all can see it each and every week. So thank you, Billy. Thank you, Two Way Radio Center.
Absolutely. We do have that that page on our website, so feel free to check out some of the folks that we work with on a regular basis. And if there's a company or an organization that doesn't that you're not familiar with, you know, the world of church safety and security is pretty small, so feel free to reach out to us, and we're happy to help you with that as well, and see what guidance we can give you wherever we can. So what were you going to say, Mike?
No, I have a guest in my office, so bear with me as I put on my other hat as a parent and take off my broadcast host hat for a moment.
Oh, you're good. So definitely check out one of the other things I like to point out on the website is that we have a listing for events and different conferences coming up. And if you would like a conference or an event in your area for your church, please feel free to reach out to us, and you can do that through the website. There is several events coming up that are listed there. Right now, tentatively, we are planning on being in Arizona in October, in Phoenix, Arizona, and
whole new part of the country for us,
for sure. Yep. Not that we haven't both been there, but
no, but
it'll be nice to connect officially with some of the churches. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the churches down there. So we've got that, and we're certainly putting together plans and ideas for next year for our main conference. And we'll keep you posted as we roll forward with that. So, without further eloquence, I guess. we'll switch to the topic at hand. And I want to give our guests as much time as possible on this broadcast. And if you're listening on a podcast at a later time, we may split it into two sections if we need to, just as an FYI, and we'll post that, etc. But the topic for the broadcast tonight, we're going to be pretty frank about it, is involving domestic violence. And if you're not comfortable with a frank discussion on that, then I just like to let you know ahead of time so you can adjust accordingly. This might not be the episode or broadcast that you want to listen to with your kids around or in the car. But it's important, and every topic that we talk about on our broadcast and podcast is important. It's important to us, and we feel that it's necessary to bring attention to it from a church perspective, not only from the safety and security team aspect, but you know, our hospitality teams, our ushers, as the churches listen, as we are involved in our local communities, we need to be aware that that domestic violence happens, and we need to know what it can look like and what it doesn't look like, and be better prepared to help law enforcement, to help the community, and to support those that might be coming into the church that have that going on in their lives as we minister to them, and certainly as we share the love of Christ with them. So I'm going to go ahead and bring our guest in, and our guest is from the West Coast, And she is, well, her name is Elise Stevens, and I'll bring her in. So thank you so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Welcome.
This is such a blessing.
So and just to give our listeners some context, I guess, I came across your information on a site, just Googling, because I think you were on a speaking site that I was on. And so did a little bit of research, kind of read your story, started following you on YouTube and other social media places, and really, really was intrigued by your story. And so reached out to you, and you thankfully you responded back and weren't like, get away from me, sure. So if you would, I'll just turn it over to you. So if you're comfortable, I would love for you just to give your bio, and then maybe just go straight into your story. And I think Mike and I will let you do that. And then if we have questions or whatnot, we'll jump in and throw them out there for you.
All right. Sounds good. So my name's Elise Stevens. On social media, I'm also known as Big Red's wife. Mm-hmm. That's like the handle that I go under. 14 years ago, I was kidnapped and held hostage while I was pregnant with my oldest daughter, who is now 14, almost 15. During my pregnancy, I was stabbed, beaten, choked. It's even a blessing that she's with me today. So when I was about 5.5 months pregnant, he attacked me so bad that he put me in acute kidney failure, and he stabbed me in the abdomen with a serrated butter knife. It went in about 1.5 inches, and I drove myself to the hospital after I began peeing blood. No one believed me. My friends all thought I was crazy. This man was somebody that we all grew up with. We all knew his family. He was just a regular guy from our area. I told the hospital that I had fallen down the stairs and landed on an X-Acto knife because I was so scared that if I told him the truth, he would kill me. He told me so many times, I'll kill you. And I'd seen that black in his eye, and I knew he was capable of it. Mm-hmm. I spent 12 days in the hospital and was released. And when I was released, I was met with all my stuff being packed in a U-Haul. And he said, you go with me or I'll kill you and the baby. He moved me 300 miles, and him and his mother kept me in a 10x10 room until I had Gracie. Gracie's name is very special to me. My grandfather was my very best friend. He was the man that taught me about the Lord. He was probably the only reason I'm a Christian today, in all honesty. Mm-hmm. And he was dying of cancer when I found out I was pregnant. And he told me, by the grace of God, I will live to see her alive. And he met her on his deathbed. I laid her on his chest, and she told me that she's beautiful. And that was when she was 10 days old. I knew that day that God is the reason I was safe. I escaped by stealing. I stole money from places that I shouldn't have to be able to save to get a train ticket. And myself and my 3-week-old daughter rode a train for 5 hours. I was 22 years old, lost. Nobody believed me. I had even gone to my pastor and asked for help. And he told me, if you were a better woman, this wouldn't happen to you. So that was what was in my mind. It was all my fault. That's what my ex told me. That's what his mom told me. That's what my pastor told me. So it was my fault. I escaped. I knew I had to get out. I knew I needed to take my daughter. When I had my daughter, it became all about her. It wasn't about me anymore. And when he laid hands on her for the first time when she was only a couple of weeks old, I knew I had to get out. So I took her and I escaped. He followed me, kidnapped me again, took me back up there. And then Gracie got viral meningitis and had to spend 5 days. She was 5 days in a coma in the Mary Bridge Children's Hospital up in Tacoma. And there was a woman there that I swear to this day was an angel. Mm. She just knew something was different. She came to me and said, "You don't have clothes. You don't have food. Are you okay?" And I just kept saying, "Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine." Well, my ex's mom would bring him food. He would bring him clothes, but not me. So she took me out in the hallway and handed me her cell phone and said, "Call home. You're strong. Call home." And she actually told me she was a Christian and that she felt the Lord leading to talk to me. Mm-hmm. I went and I called my mom, and my mom and I we still do not have a good relationship. My mom didn't believe me even that this was happening, but she had agreed to come get me and Gracie. But for the next 8 weeks, he just chased me. Didn't matter where I went or what I was doing. He was always there. If it wasn't for a group of 8 strangers, like I say that because they were truly strangers, I would not be here today. There was 8 people that believed me. They're still some of my best friends. One is my husband today. When I went to them, they believed me. When I told them he kidnapped me, he's hurt me, they could see it, and they didn't make me feel like I was crazy. They also stood behind me while I went to court. They were there every step of the way, and I give them all credit. But I know that the Lord brought them into my life. Like, he was there every step of the way. There is a part of my story that I was ashamed of for a very, very long time. And I held it in for 11 years. But my ex, he raped me when I was only 4 weeks postpartum. And I came out pregnant. And I was pregnant with twins. And I was raised Christian. And I knew that abortion is not even an option, but I did it. I did it. And I was shamed by churches left and right without even them knowing it. Because I would walk into a church and you would hear, "Abortion is the only unforgiven sin," or "Anybody that has an abortion can never be in heaven." And I would sit over there in silence, thinking, "I'll never go to heaven." Without these people even knowing that they were doing that to me. I was working in a private Christian school and I was approached by a woman. She asked me to tell my story to the community. And that part of my story was one I wasn't ready to tell the community because I was working as a private Christian school teacher. And I had a very good name for myself and a wait list. And that is a shameful sin. And I went to my headmaster and he said, "God gives us stories to use, or God gives us stories to hide behind. And you can choose to take your story and use it, or you can take your story and hide behind it." That was my last year of teaching. I knew that day was the Lord sending me on a mission. And today I tell my story worldwide to help other people see that they're not alone, that God will forgive them if they had an abortion. I believe people when they tell me they're being abused. I never shame anybody for it. And it's the simple things that are said that people don't realize really will send someone into their shell. And we have to learn to put words to our triggers so that we can help other people.
I think it's interesting you say that because I've seen that. And again, I think it's the cultural influences, of churches specifically. But a lot of times we've grown up with a phrase, a church-based phrase or thought or theology, I guess, that's just not accurate. And we try and apply that today. And I've seen intentionally and unintentionally people get hurt because they're not thinking about, the actual context of what's going on and what that communicates. So I certainly I certainly can understand that. One of the things that I thought was interesting about, and it's really amazing to me that that God has brought you through that, and also place the certain people in your life at the right time to, you know, to encourage you and to build you up and strengthen you to tell that story.
I have like an episode series on my TikTok that mm-hmm. talks about all the quote unquote angel appearances or occurrences that I had in that time. One of them was I had tried to escape when I was about 38 weeks pregnant, and the trains or the bus station was 5 miles from their home. And this was in Washington on a very busy highway, Riverside Drive. And I just started walking, and I was huge, and it was the middle of July, super hot. Started walking, got to a gas station, and there was a man who approached me, asked me if I wanted a ride, and then he made a very inappropriate gesture to me, and it freaked me out. So I ran into the gas station, and this woman, she just swooped me up. She put me in the car. She drove me to the bus station. I just felt like I was at home. And she told me, "You'll get out, you'll be strong." She didn't know that my ex was waiting for me in the bus station to take me back. But I have since searched for that woman. I even called that gas station because I wanted to find her. I wanted to tell her today, like, this is where I'm at. This is how I'm doing. I am okay. No one knows her name. They can all place her. But no, even the gas station is like, we didn't have any females on record being employed at that time. And I was like, what is, like, this is crazy. I know that the Lord saw me through that time. And people ask me a lot, how can you not be angry at God for putting you through that? And I make it very simple. We're human, and God gives us the choice between right and wrong. He'll guide us when we make the wrong choice. But we have to allow him to guide us. You know, we have to see that we made the wrong choice and ask for that help and allow him to guide us out of it. So I can't be angry at him for a choice that I made.
Yeah. Wow. What a testimony, and what a journey. I feel like just compelled to kind of, I'm sorry you had to go through that, because it's just, I mean, no one should have to, and yet you sit there and you listen to it, and I've heard many stories from many folks, and it still gets me anytime that people have been through that type of ordeal. It's just, how can you not? And I think if you get to that point where you're desensitized to it, you may need to take a break from that line of work, or you may need to reconsider a line of work, because it stirs us as down to our core as human beings. That's just not right. So thank you for sharing. And it's really interesting how you see both in that story, the testimony of those that kind of came to your defense and protection. And of course, in a church safety perspective, we're all about not just safety from the church perspective, and that's where we talk a lot about, but it's creating that safe environment. And creating a safe environment is about more than standing post. It's about more than just looking at people on a Sunday morning and deciding whether your service is safe. It's about fostering an environment that's safe for everyone in that sense. And just hearing through your story is, it wasn't a safe environment. The response just was not safe. And it let that fester, and in your own, fully right to go there and think that that was, hey, you're seeking refuge, you're seeking shepherding, and you're going to your shepherd. Okay. And you didn't get that. And I think that's the unfortunate part. And we're all human. I think that's one thing I want to mention too, is people make bad judgments, and people, including that, clearly to not hear you out or listen or try to help or do something. But then others, just out of the blue, feel that call and are, hey, I'm supposed to pick this person up at this gas station. I'm supposed to go here. Like, I don't know why I'm here, but all of a sudden I'm here. And now they spring into action. So I really call them like, it's the opposite of coincidences. I call them God incidences in the sense that they're not coincidental at all. It's 100% something that God moved mountains to have things happen. And while it didn't necessarily prevent some of the worst things that happened from happening, there were efforts to try to pull you out of it, to help you, whether it's the encouragement, whether it was even the opportunity for the dollars, or whether it was the chance to kind of feel even safe for a moment, even if that safety was then ripped back away. So I think those little things we find, sometimes people look at it from silver lining, and I often go back and say, no, those were moments, and I kind of see them like as telephone poles. And yes, there's less telephone poles now that we're in mobile world, but telephone poles have that natural swoop between the pole, and the line goes up, and then it drops, and then it goes up, and then it drops. To me, those tent poles, those telephone poles, if you will, those are those high water marks. Those are those times where we as humans can truly recognize God's hand in our life. And I think that sometimes they go further between, and sometimes they're really close and we can really feel it, and we can, and other times we feel like it's distant and we can't see the last pole. And so I think it's just this ebb and a flow. So I was just struck by the element of God placing people there to kind of respond in that sense. And as a true sense, responding in some way, not because they were wearing a badge or they were standing post and they're responding to an immediate crisis, but there was still a crisis. They just may not fully have understood how they were responding and how they were helping.
Well, part of my story is that what made it go so viral is that I hired my bodyguard and I married him.
I was going to actually ask you to talk about that, because that's the light at the end of the tunnel.
I actually met Big Red in high school. A mutual friend of ours told me, I know the man you're going to marry. And she introduced us and I was like, nope, not for me. But 5 years later, my ex took me to this party. He made me go to this party because he wanted to show off my daughter and all this. And I walked in and Big Red was there. We made eye contact. And it was the first time in a year that I felt safe. Like, he didn't have to say anything. He didn't have to do anything. I just felt safe. It was about 8 weeks later that I actually put my ex in jail, left him, and then my ex was breaking into my house. He wasn't following the restraining order, and I needed a night's sleep. I had a 3-month-old baby. I was trying to heal emotionally and physically. The night that I had my ex arrested, I walked away with being headbutted so hard in the forehead I could barely walk. I had cauliflower ear, 2 broken vertebrae, some broken ribs, bruises from head to toe, and hot oil burns from head to toe. So I had to heal physically, emotionally, and mentally, and I needed a night's sleep. So I asked him, I jokingly said, I'll give you $100 to just sleep at my house so I know I'm safe so I can sleep. And he packed me up and Gracie up and he took us to his house. It wasn't a romantic thing. It was literally just, he got called to action and he did it. We ended up falling in love and getting married just weeks later. We're still married today. it's not always been roses. And until we really put the Lord first in our marriage 3 or 4 years ago, you know, it was a hard go, but now we have a wonderful marriage and there is a light at the end of the tunnel, like you said.
That's crazy. One of the questions that we received, I think it was a week or two ago in our group, was an individual from a church asked the question, how involved do you get with someone's personal life? Because oftentimes, from a safety and security standpoint, if it's a safety team at the church, you know, they just do things at the church. They don't typically go outside of that that church campus or whatnot. And so this gentleman posted in one of our groups, has anyone ever gone outside of that to help provide safety and security for someone in need that maybe attends the church or do something more? And, you know, my response over the years of serving in the church and in that capacity was, you know, absolutely. There have been times where I've gone with pastors, like if a pastor gets called and maybe the situation's kind of intense or dicey and they need some extra protection, I will go with them and I will help them. And I'm not, you know, I'm not an expert, you know, martial artist trainer or anything like that. I've done quite a bit in my lifetime and with public safety and certainly trained quite a bit in executive protection and stuff like that. But what's interesting to me is that that really it builds or brings forward the question of, you know, how much as a church do we get involved with people's lives, and do we really know, you know, what's happening and what's going on, and can we really help someone, or are we just kind of in that, you know, I don't know, crazy zoning out where we just pass somebody on Sunday and we're just like, oh, hey, how's it going? Oh, I'm fine. And, you know, and walk on. I had a situation, I think it was about 2 years ago, where I was with one of our pastors and a lady came up, and an older, sweet lady in our church. She had been going there for years. And the pastor asked her, he said, hey, how has your week been? And she was like, oh, you know, so-and-so Charlie, obviously isn't his name, but her husband, she's like, Charlie had one of his bad weeks this week. And the pastor and I kind of looked at her and we're like, oh, he had a bad week. And she was like, well, yeah, you know, he grabbed a steak knife and chased me around the kitchen once. And then I got him to calm down. And then I went and sat down. And, but you know, there are sometimes, and I mean, she said it like she was just so calm and even, you know, even toned. And I was like, what? Like, what just happened? Like, your husband just chased you around the kitchen with a steak knife and tried to attack you, and you're okay. And I kind of stopped and I like looked over at the pastor, and then I said to her, you know, you're okay. What happened? And she's like, oh, and the, you know, the pastor's eyes got really big because he's a great guy and he's very caring. And he was like, we need to get you out of the house. We need to get you some help. This has gone to like, this is way over the edge. Like, let's help you. And she was like, oh no, it's not that important. I don't want to bother you.
And, because you it know, becomes normal. Like, yeah. you honestly don't know how. That was actually one of my biggest marriage issues with Big Red for so many years, was I expected him to hit me. Like, if you didn't hit me, you didn't love me. So my mother was also abusive. So my childhood was abusive. And then I was in an abusive relationship. So love and emotion to me was abuse. So it becomes okay. It becomes normal. And even like I talk about it, I talk about what happened to me like it's everyday life. And I forget that people around me have never experienced things like that. And a lot of people around me and in the community that I live in, it's like they live in this world where violence doesn't happen. Like,
it's like a bubble.
Yeah. And they don't want to believe it. And so I'll say it and they're like, what? Well, you don't look like you've been in a domestic violence relationship. It's like, oh, should I wear a red like cross on my shirt with bruises on my face? And like, how do you, yeah. I mean, there's not a look to it. It becomes so normal. We talk about it like it's normal. It doesn't scare us anymore. One thing that I'm really prominent about is the word shelter. I hate the word shelter because you're taking a woman or a man out of a situation where they're controlled, and you're putting them in a situation where they're again controlled. And I understand that the control of a shelter is with good intentions, but they don't see it that way because mentally they're so used to the normal of their life. Sure. That trying to give them an actual normal life is very hard. Like, in that we will walk by you and say, we're fine because we're not bleeding today. So we're fine. You know, yeah. We might have only got hit 3 times today instead of 4. So we're good. I mean, and you do have to get into their personal life because what if somebody would have actually tried to reach out to me and found out, wow, she really is stuck in a 10 by 10 room. How can we help her? Because when I would go out with them in public, I was clean. I was put together. I was told to behave and act a certain way. People had no clue what was going on behind that door. And right. People have no clue what's going on behind any door. I mean, that and it's very... It's a very scary thing because behind any door can be an abuser and the victim is so used to it that you really have to dig deep. And until that victim is ready, just like an alcoholic they have to be ready in their own time. They have to be secure in their own time.
And I think, honestly, to kind of jump in there, and then I'll throw it over to Mike real quick. What you said earlier, being in tune to what's going on, that's when you were just talking about that. At least that was kind of what popped into my head was, you know, being in tune with the Holy Spirit. There have been times where I've walked through my church and been focused, you know, drinking my coffee, focused on, you know, different things operationally, you know, what needs to happen in the church and trying to be helpful and that sort of thing. And I've just prayed, you know, God, give me the opportunity to help somebody today, like in a special way. And then I'll walk by somebody and just in the back of my mind, something doesn't look right. Something's not normal for that person. And so they're, you know, I've shared some of those stories on our broadcast here, over the years, you know, with Mike, but, you know, there have been times where I've literally stopped and I felt like God saying, go back and talk to that person and dig a little deeper and pray with that person or offer to pray. And, that's really given me some crazy experiences. And again, I'm not a counselor, although, you know, I've had some of that training, but just being able to pull somebody aside and say, you know, hey, can I pray with you? Is there something, because you don't seem like right, you know? And, I think that's important. And I certainly think from a safety and a security perspective for the safety teams out there listening, I think that's as important as anything else, is being in tune with the Holy Spirit to know when you can impact somebody in a positive way and be helpful and go above and beyond with what they have going on. Mike, you were going to jump in.
Yeah, I think at least you brought up kind of a couple of points, I think, that I picked up on and kind of took a note, want to circle back to. I think is you highlighted the fact that, you know what, even when you're being abused, it's not something that's always clear. You're not going to have it on your sleeve, on your skin, to visible in the sense. And then we're dealing with folks that very easily kind of almost a confirmation bias. They think things are fine. They expect things to be fine. They know the situation or think they do, and therefore they get in their own way with confirmation bias, which is interpreting newer evidence, even if it's right in front of them, as, oh, it's fine. It does that. It doesn't, because it causes them to question their belief of everything being okay, their belief that there's no way that could happen to me. I mean, we see it with pastors where they're like, that can never happen to my church. And then it does. We mm-hmm. see it happen to other people where you don't think it can happen. And then it does. But this is, I saw that really as something where people were hearing from you and not necessarily listening to you. They were circling back into their own mind and finding their own evidence to say, oh no, she's fine. And that to me just struck out as confirmation bias right there, is because they were so willing to believe the picture they had painted that there was no possible way that any evidence to the contrary could be true. And so it just became something that they kind of got out of their own way. So it's closing that point is it's not always something that is clear. And so I hope our audience kind of understands that, is that you probably have it in your midst and it's not aware to you. There may be people you've spoken to, prayed for, talked to on a regular basis that just may not have been ready to come forward. Or understand that you know that they're that situation, and that's part of having you on tonight, is while your specific circumstance didn't necessarily happen at a church, we wanted people to understand from your perspective, having gone through that, to share that authentic story to what that actually means, so that they can think about it in a different lens.
And it didn't happen at a church. But I see how God worked in my story, and I see that, you know, I was raised a Christian and I fell from the church, but God still loved me, you know, and he saw me through that. Yeah. And I use this today, like it is normal to me. Like, I literally have a toxic trait. I kind of find it funny to stand in a crowd and say, hi, I was kidnapped and held hostage, and see how many people I can make squirm. Because I was also told by a pastor once, you're not growing unless you're uncomfortable. You know, and our world has gotten so comfortable in don't ruffle the feathers. Don't say anything. Oh, he's a good guy. We don't want to say anything. Oh, he's a doctor, or oh, she's this. We, you know, if there's a problem, they'll say something.
Cultural value on someone's profession. Mike and I have seen that. We see that daily.
It's like, you know, you don't want to ruffle the feathers, and it's like, you know, you're not growing when you're comfortable. You're not growing in your life. You're not growing in your belief. You're not growing spiritually. You have to step out of your comfort zone. You have to step up for people. You have to show them that you will live for God and you will fight for God. You know, God wouldn't just sit back. Would he? Yep. I mean, would he? If God was sitting there and for said, sure, this person is obviously abused, would God sit back? No. You know, and we just went through a situation a couple years ago where our son was abused in a Christian private school by his teacher. It was documented across the board by multiple people in our communities, health officials and psychiatrists. And instead of going after that school legally, because I have a heart for Christian education, I believe in it so completely, I went to my pastor, who the church was connected to the school, and he looked at me and told me that mental and emotional abuse are not abuse. And it made me sad, because it's like, what is abuse then? Do they have to have a bruise on them? Do they have to have a mark? You know, so many people are beat down every day because we just think it's okay. And it's not. All of our feelings are valid. Every person's trauma is valid. Like you were telling me earlier, you had some trauma from a church at one point. That's just as valid as my trauma. It affected you as my trauma affected me. We both have to heal from it and grow from it.
Well, and honestly, that's the truth. And certainly my experiences are nothing compared to what you've experienced and what God has brought you and Gracie through. But at the same time, I think it's important to consider that, because like Mike said, confirmation bias or bias in itself, I mean, that's hitting the nail right on the head, because we get so complacent with how we think things should be, even in a church, where it's like, this is how everybody should be. Like everyone, And, you know, Mike and I talk to pastors and talk to churches all the time, but there's a certain, in talking with some pastors, there's a certain mentality where it's like, well, everyone in the church has to be good little Christians and stand in a row and do the same thing over and over again. And I know that's kind of a silly, you know, silly comment, but at the same time, you know, there are things that have happened between, you know, COVID and in our society and mental health and different things like that, where as a church, we need to start looking at it as a being proactive to address things like this and not reactive. And I say that all the time because, you know, again, growing up in a church where, you know, exactly like you said, like if something happened in your life that maybe the pastor didn't agree with, that was the unpardonable sin, or this happened or that happened. And it's like, wait a second, you know, what happened to the example that Jesus left for us? Jesus went to where other people wouldn't go to reach people that nobody else wanted to reach. So as a church, now, yes, there is a balance, and we've talked about that, you know, almost every broadcast, there's a balance in safety and security and providing protection to the folks in the church that are attending. But at the same time, you know, the church doors have to be open to the community, and we have to be able to respond to help the people that are coming in. Because if we're not aware and able to respond, then is that church really going to be effective in what their mission is and what their purpose? Well, I mean, maybe their mission, but does that connect in with, you know, with God's mission? Probably not, you know, because again, they're focused on what's, you know, what's making them comfortable versus trying to help those in need, you know, yeah, in the community.
There's so much more than just the physical too. I think you brought up a good point, is the fact that, I mean, domestic abuse really is abuse that's beyond just physical violence. You said it yourself, the emotional, I mean, the isolation, I mean, the putting you in the 10 by 10 is a form of isolation. I mean, you entail that hostage taking element to it, where you were kind of locked away and you were whisked away and kept against your will. And so that's an element. The threats, certainly from the first moment on, to threats that you're going to come with me now, and or gaslighting and other sorts of tools that are used to manipulate the mind. And that's all over the place. So it's rampant. And the idea that, I mean, this is something that plagues society, I think, in general, is the idea that mental health is not the same as physical health. And so they're conflating that as much as they're conflating the abuse situation, is that abuse is abuse, just like health is health. Whether it happened in your brain or whether it happened on your arm isn't the delta. Both happened. And so I think at that point, it's a matter of understanding that better. And clearly there are some folks, including in the church, that are still not correct on that matter, that are missing that entirely.
Well, I'm going to tell you that my bones healed. My bruises, they're gone. But it took me 11 years to even, like, my husband's family found out about my story at the same time as the world did. For 11 years, only 4 people knew what I went through. My three of them were my best friends, and one was my husband. I didn't talk about it because I was so ashamed mentally that I allowed him to do that to me. You know, and as one thing I've noticed since I've gone public is, I will say, you know, I've been kidnapped and held hostage, and I'll see a woman or a man's face kind of light up, and they'll look at me and they'll say, me too, or I've been there, or it's okay. You know, and it's that simple just connection that makes it okay. But one thing I've noticed, like, in churches is they don't have, like, the churches that I've been to, they need to have somebody on staff that has been through it, not that's trained in it, because I've talked to hundreds of people that are trained in it, but it hasn't sure. been until I talked to somebody that's been in it that I actually felt like there was a connection. They cared. They wanted to help me, see me out. I believed them when they were saying, "You can. There is a light at the end of the tunnel." There's just a different connection with somebody when they've been through it. And that's one thing, like, if I can say anything of how churches can help somebody that's been with domestic violence, even if it's a volunteer who's on staff that says, "Hey, if you have a crisis in the middle of the night and you need someone to come and talk to this woman or man, I'm here." You know, it's just having that there is something that I feel is truly needed.
And that's really empathy in its barest of bones right there, is the ability to truly understand. And we talked about this a little bit, at least before we went on air, is the fact that hearing the story is one thing, and I've heard from many, but you said it yourself, the direct understanding that true, we can try to show as the best as we can to be empathetic for a situation, but unless we've truly been through it, can we fully ever grasp that? So we can try to be compassionate. We can try to show empathy, but are we truly that extra way where you've walked that mile in those shoes and you can relate in that deeper way? And some things we just, not everybody can. So you're absolutely right.
And when you have, when you're going through it and you go to somebody and you start telling them, like, I remember, I'll never forget, I started telling this person, I was like, he hits me and he stabbed me and he's kicked me and he does all this. And I could see in their face, they wanted to help me, but they were also scared and shocked and hurt. And so I just stopped talking because I was like, they want to help me, but they don't know how. And I could sense it. So I just clammed up, you know. But when you have somebody, when you can tell these things to somebody who's not shocked because they've been there, you know, they don't have that same, like, "Oh my goodness, what? How do I deal with this?" And my driveway is open to people. Like, I bring people to my home that are in domestic violence situations. I help people. I don't have any fear anymore. But I also, there's not much or anything that somebody can tell me they have been through that I can honestly say I have not been through something very similar. And my door is always open to talk anybody.
I think it's in just kind of wrapping up a little bit for sake of time, but I'm thinking, you know, one of the things, it's interesting, one of the things that I always write a list of notes, obviously, when we do the broadcast, and I know Mike does too, but one of the things that I first wrote when I was thinking this afternoon, I was going to actually ask you what your thought was on the idea of believing. Like, when someone comes to you, instead of walking away and discrediting that because it's too much, like, listen and believe. And I didn't, honestly, I haven't even asked you that question in the last hour. And that's what I'm coming back with. Like, take the time to be real and be focused and listen and believe the person. Mm-hmm. Because there's a difference when someone is passionate about and emotional about what's going on and when they're being dramatic. Like, mm-hmm. and if you're connected, you don't have to necessarily have similar experiences, but if you have wisdom from the Holy Spirit and you have that guidance, 9 times out of 10 in any situation that I've ever been in, I've been able to say, this is what's drama and this is what's accurate, and let's pare down and get to what's really going on and believe and accurate. And if you don't have, and I say this to all the teams out there that are listening, if you don't have those resources to have someone as a counselor or someone that's been through it, and maybe you haven't been through any specific training, that's fine, because listening and believing goes so much further. And if you don't feel like that's doing anything, connect with your pastor, bring somebody else in, get help. Because the reality is, you know, there, all of us have situations where we get to that point. I mean, I've been through, you know, public safety and different things as a firefighter, EMT, as a police officer. You know, I've been on disasters. I've been a disaster chaplain, all this other stuff. But at some point in time, the time will come that I'm going to really step into a situation where my brain goes, you know, tilt. I can't, like, this is more than you can handle because you don't know how to, you know, you've never done this or you've never dealt with it. And that's really the point where we need to step back and we need to look and at, okay, who can we bring in? Who can we partner with? Who can we pull into this situation? Because it's definitely, something's not right. And we need to be as helpful and supportive as possible. You know, and sometimes that's, you know, that individual is easy to find, sometimes not so much, but it's okay to step back in a situation, I guess is what I'm trying to say, and be overwhelmed by it. But what you do with it at that point is what makes the difference. And you can't just walk away and be overwhelmed by it. You have to be able to help that person. You have to be able to move forward to get them at least to resources that are helpful. Even if you don't know how to handle it or what to do, that's okay, because every situation is a tiny bit different. But
it might be doing tapping something out. I mean, it, with our teams, it might simply be tapping out and saying, hey, can you help me out here? Or bringing in a pastor, or bringing in somebody else, or saying, hey, can I learn more a little bit? Or just listening to the person, and you may realize what their need really is, and therefore connect them with a person who is more suited to potentially handle that situation, or work through that individual piece. So the idea is showing empathy, being able to listen, and not necessarily just overwhelmed and leaving it go.
Simply saying, I believe you, is like, those I believe you are the three words that they're all, that's all they're seeking. That's all they're seeking. They want validation that their own feelings are valid. That's it. You know how many times I sat there and thought, this is abuse. But then when I would go talk to somebody, they'd say, no, it's not. And it would set me back into that spiral. But if one person might have said, I believe you, every person that said, I believe you to me, gave me the strength to do one more step forward, to do that one more, I'm going to leave today. Every person, it was, okay, I can leave. I can do this, you know, and it, you might say, I believe you, and they might run back to their spouse that night. They might be back in a week. This may be a cycle you have to do 10, 12, 15 times. But every time you tell that person, I believe you, you're giving them one more ounce of strength in their shoe to step out that door. But every time we say, I can't help you, I don't know how to help you, you're setting that person back and they feel alone.
I want to thank you for coming on, Elise, and I want to put another point out there. As I did put into the feed, the National Domestic Violence Hotline itself, it is there. If you're listening, if you know somebody that, you know, it needs somebody to talk to, and you need to kind of go that route, that number is there. Really, just people need somebody to help. And so that's an offer to help. Hopefully your pastor will help. Hopefully there's other people in your life that will show up and pick you up at a gas station and take you to the bus station. But
and my messenger is always open. We have, you know, we started a Big Red's Wife's Army. I have hundreds of people all over the United States that have helped me help people get out of situations.
That's awesome.
You know, we have TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, all of that. And it's always open. And there's videos there that they can relate to. They can, you know, and if a pastor needs somebody to talk to somebody, my email is connected to all that. And God sent me on this path just to help whoever walks into my path. It doesn't matter if you're from the UK or Canada or Oregon. Like, I am willing to talk to you, and and I'm willing to be here for you.
Or some church safety podcast.
Or yeah, or some church safety podcast. You know, I've really enjoyed being on your podcast, so it's been such a venture.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your testimony with the audience, and hopefully that it reaches somebody and gives them maybe that courage to take some step if they're in that situation. So thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
All right. So we'll wrap up. So again, you can reach out to Elise Stevens on, she's on YouTube. She has a great YouTube channel with videos, and then also TikTok as well. Mike posted the information earlier on the broadcast, but thank you so much for joining us on this podcast as you listen to it later. And again, for Church Safety and Security, with a ministry first focus, if we can help you in any way, please feel free to reach out to us through our website, which is churchsafetyguys.com, or through one of the social media platforms that we're on. And we would love to help you and your team however we can. So next week, we actually have Jared back with us, and he'll be
two weeks.
That's right. I'm sorry. Next week is Father's Day. Thank you. Thanks for reminding me. So Father's Day, we're actually, Mike and I will be off the air. We'll have a repeat broadcast playing. And then the following week, in 2 weeks, we'll have Jared back with us, and we'll be doing Real Stories of Church Safety and Security, his segment. And I always look forward to that because I never see who the guest is. I never know who the guest is. And Jared's like, I got this person. And usually it's pretty cool. So you don't want to miss that. But in the meantime, if we can help you or do anything for you, please don't be afraid to reach out to us. And until next time, take care. God bless. Have a great week.
Thank you for joining the Church Safety Guys broadcast, brought to you by Vigilant Impact. We hope that you found it informative, and we appreciate your feedback and interaction. Be sure to share our broadcast with your teams, join the discussion online, and connect with us on social media or at our website at churchsafetyguys.com.
At Centurion Bible College, we're authentic about relationships, we're passionate on training, we're unapologetically biblical. And as the first college in the United States to design an associate's program in church safety and security, we're innovative. Explore Centurion Bible College and you'll find the tools to be better prepared to support your community and the mission of your church, the culture to help you engage with the people you serve with, and the environment to foster learning and leadership. Discover Centurion Bible College today. Enhance and develop the skills to engage and connect with your community when they need you the most. Be intentional in your community with a ministry mindset, understand concepts of safety and security, and make a difference today. For more information or to enroll, visit centurionbc.org or churchsafetyguys.com.